You know, oh, it's the start of something, hopefully.
Welcome to the Garibaldi Gazette, a podcast about Nottingham Forest. This week, are Forest any good? Are West Ham any good? How can the club do more good stuff? Offering repeated reminders that Sheffield United's win at Luton means Derby County remain the worst team in history, this is the Garibaldi Gazette. Worst in history. Like, historically bad. The worst ever. We won't let them forget it, folks. We will not let them forget it, nor should we. Hope you're well. Anyway, it's me, Matt Davis Adams. I've got Arsha Ali with me this week. How are you doing, Arsha?
I'm good. I'm here. I'm ready. I'm ready to talk about Forest.
Before we do that, is it bad that I enjoy that Derby thing so much? Every season when the worst team in the Premier League struggling and everybody goes, ooh, are they going to be as bad as Derby? It just makes me so happy when they pass the 11-point mark.
I don't think it's bad. I think it's an amusing sideshow, and it's just another storyline to kind of add to our wonderful time that we're having in the Premier League.
Yeah, let's enjoy it until next season when we'll probably be back in the same division.
Yeah.
Plus one another. Nick is busy this week, by the way, so it's just me and Arsha, but we've got a very, very special guest joining us later on. I thought we'd start, though, with while we were away, because a fair bit's happened. Forest beat Bristol City on penalties in the FA Cup, just as somebody sagely predicted. Arsha, is this the start of the Matt Turner redemption story or just a nice little final chapter for him? Please say it's the latter.
Nah, nothing changed for me. I looked on in a sort of cold way and sort of said to myself, this changes nothing.
But thank you for your time, Matt. According to the Forest Preservation Society on X, formerly known as Twitter, which is well worth a follow, by the way. It's a really good account. Forest have won 14 of the 16 penalty shootouts that we've participated in. The only ones that ever spring to my mind, Arsha, I mean, there's three big ones, really, isn't there? I'm thinking Mark Crosley at White Hart Lane, FA Cup mid-90s. I'm thinking playoff semi, obviously. And then Wolves last season. I don't know if there's any others that you can immediately think of. Maybe they were all before our time, given that we're so young.
Maybe they are, but I think the thing that really shocked me, and it is a great account, by the way, you should completely follow that account. What shocked me was that we just obviously have such a good record. It's mad. Like, you think of Forest now, when they put a ball down and it's sort of a dead ball situation, you just expect nothing. It's like when you're watching a game and, like, you can sort of see that, a corner's coming. You sort of know that that's a good time to look at your phone, because absolutely nothing will happen other than probably conceding a goal. So to be that good and to have that good of a record in, dead ball situations, it was a massive shock.
Let us know if you've got a favourite Forest shootout, by the way, at the Garibaldi G on Twitter or X, if you prefer. What's your mood FA Cup-wise, Arsha? Are you of the mind that, oh, we could do without a cup run, or should we just enjoy hosting Man United? It's the second time in 10 seasons we've been as far as the fifth round of the FA Cup.
It doesn't feel like a party. Like, last season it felt like, and the season before, it felt like a party. It was like, whoa, this is, this is a different room in this party. Wow, what's going on in here? FA Cup. Whereas now it feels like, oh my God, why is that party still going on? We have got so many problems. The chandelier is hanging off the ceiling. We need to tidy up here. I don't know. It just feels like we haven't got the squad for it at the moment. That's the kind of basic, obvious thing. We just do not have the squad to cope with this and trying to survive in the Premier League. We're still in this time of change. We've got Nuno in, and, everything around the club still feels like it's kind of molten and not quite kind of formed and sort of solid. So the FA Cup for me, just I do not care about it. Like this time around, I just don't care. For me, the major worry is obviously the relegation scrap that we've found ourselves in.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that later. Just to extend your analogy, Man United coming, it's a bit like a very, very rich guest who doesn't understand that it's fun to break stuff at the party, but we haven't really got the money to replace it in the morning. And we can't just, you know, get a team of cleaners to come and sort out the mess. We're going to have to do it ourselves. So, yeah, let's see if we can beat Man United again anyway. It'd be good fun, wouldn't it? AFCON, the other big thing that's concluded since last we met, Ibrahim Sangare and Willy Bolly emerged as winners. Bolly made four appearances. He didn't feature in the final. Sangare came off the bench in the semi and the final, having started the first four. Are we putting a bit too much stock in him coming back and now being amazing on the basis that he's been away and won a tournament? How likely is that to happen? And as for Bolly, we've missed him far more, right?
I think with Sangare, the best thing that's come out of this is that he's been in the trenches with a team, because Ivory Coast, like the little I saw of this tournament, they were like a joke at the beginning. They really were a mess. So in that way, it's good to see him like be in a team that was completely written off and, you know, just looked like a bunch of strangers, to being part of, you know, a squad that kind of managed to find it in themselves somehow and turn it around to eventually win. So if he can bring some of that back home, yeah, great. You know, like we've said before, he was starting to find his feet. So hopefully he can kind of continue that. And we do need him. And Bolly, again, like he's solid. For me, he comes straight back in. You know, I have yet to be convinced of the kind of, you know, the permutations that we've seen at centre-back by any of them, really, moments. But we need that kind of, like, kind of totem pole, really. And he definitely feels like that, which is so bizarre that we're saying this, you know, because when he did sign, we were all a bit like, oh, Willy Bolly. But he really has become quite important as the kind of one in the two who sits back much deeper and just dominates in the air.
Yeah, Niakate, a little bit inconsistent for me. I'm Obamadeli and Murillo still young. So yeah, welcome back, Willie. Ola Aina, or Ola Aina, as he seems to be nowadays, was on the losing side in the final. Got absolutely roasted by Simon Adingra and skied his pen in the semi-shootout. But presumably, Arsh, we're just going to sweep all that under the carpet and just assume that he's going to come back and pick up where he left off.
I think so. I think we have to. And I think, I'm sure he'll want to. And Premier League football and AFCON football, completely different. I'm not sure if he comes straight back in, though, in a strange way, because Montiel is obviously injured. But I think Nico Williams has done quite well. You know, like, there's obviously moments, but I guess that's, as a team, they've had moments where it's looked quite shaky. But I don't know. I feel like he is sort of stealthily improving game by game, and he definitely felt like he was a sort of Steve Cooper led signing. So when Nuno came in, I did have that kind of thought, like, oh, is he going to be fancied, or is he going to end up going out on loan to, you know, Leeds or whatever that he was linked with. So I'm glad he stuck about. So you know, I'm not sure it is so, you know, as straightforward as, oh, you come straight back in, because I think that might be quite unfair on Nico Williams.
All right. Well, it's good to have bodies back. Anyway, if anybody can tell us why Ola's shorts are always so long, please do let us know, because that's something that I find absolutely fascinating. And next today, though, we're going to look back on the game against Newcastle, which was another galling 3-2 defeat for the Reds. Newcastle nicking the points at the world famous. Our friend David Marples was there. Here are his full-time thoughts.
So, what I'm actually wondering this evening, friends, is, are we any good? I mean, I honestly don't know. I flip-flop between thinking we are laborious and slow and ponderous to maybe thinking we're actually half-decent, maybe even something at least approaching good. Against Bristol City, definitely the former. But against Newcastle this evening, the latter. Maybe? But I really don't know, and tonight's performance has almost just muddied the waters even further. I mean, if you look at it, we've had some decent, good individual performances, and dare I say it, play quite well. Yeah, I know. The obvious faults, set pieces, etc. And I told myself during large parts of the game that we're improving and looking decent, and would, whatever happened, come away feeling heartened, because at least we've put a really good performance in. For instance, Murillo, really good performance, obviously a good player. Gibbs White, good performance, good player. Hudson Odoi, you get the idea. Matt Sells didn't seem to do much too much wrong, but we still managed to concede 3 goals. Nobody really seemed to stand out as having a poor game. I didn't feel we were going to concede every time Newcastle came forward, which was obviously very pleasing. And I did feel that we looked a threat ourselves, but still. So on the whole, a good, inverted commas, performance, but still we've managed to find ourselves on the wrong end of another 3-2 defeat, which is totally baffling and leads me to think that we're not, in fact, very good. Or that we're quite good at some things, but less so at others. Or that we are moving towards being something approximating good. So, not for the first time, I'm really baffled. If you could answer these questions about whether we are any good on the pod and provide a clear and maybe definitive rating as to how good we are, then that would be good. So are we good? Or am I deceiving myself thinking that that was a good performance? Maybe. Or is it the case that we are quite good, but just not good enough? Far too many questions there for you to address, however. I expect to hear answers from you and for you to show you're working with graphs, bar charts and many other complicated equations and formulas. Thank you, bye.
Thanks to David. Head to bio.site/David Marples to check out all his fine work. Well, riffing on David's theme, as Sean Ryder once said, good, 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 double good. What do we think about Forest, Archer? David wonders if we're any good. I'm not 100% sure. What do you reckon?
Sometimes we're good. Sometimes we're bad. I don't know. This sounds like something that Eric Cantona might have said. I don't know. It's just consistency, I guess. It's not really particularly expert analysis I'm offering here. But I guess you can lean on that lovely cliche of the league table doesn't lie, etc. And it doesn't at this point. And I had a look as well. I sort of looked back at where we were at this point last season after 24 games. And we're worse off at the moment. What does that mean? Who knows? I don't know. But, you know, so after 24 games last season, you know, we were on 25 points and, you know, we're 4 points worse off now. And we were sitting pretty in 13th, having just drawn with Man City in that sort of epic way that we did with Chris Wood. So it's like on paper, we're not, you know, just in the cold light of day, we're not as good as we were last season at this point. I think for me, the kind of problem is it sort of goes to the ownership in a way. I feel like, you know, that's not me trying to shoehorn in an attack on the ownership. It just feels like there was a lot of rhetoric at the beginning of the season of, you know, we're going to, you know, be better this season. You know, we're going to move up the league. You know, everyone in the city must match our ambition. It's not enough for us to, you know, survive and all that kind of stuff.
We're serious about the Europa League, are you? Kind of vibes.
Exactly. So it felt like I was certainly, you know, not taken in by that, because we all know, we've seen the teams that come up, the promoted teams that come up, they always struggle in the second season. It's you know, it's do or die in the second season. And it's, you know, if you can survive that, then possibly good things kind of await. So I wasn't really taken in by that. So I'm not sure if it feels like as a fan base, we were kind of expecting that, oh, you know, we've splashed 30 million on one player. This means that, you know, we are entitled to move up a few league places. So all of that is a way of saying, I don't know if we're any good. We're really good on the break. Yeah, that was illustrated very clearly on Sky on the weekend. You know, we've got sort of the most goals on fast breaks or whatever. So we can be completely thrilling. You know, we can be swashbuckling, you know, this a mad collection of hot pirates. You know, we can do that. We can plunder kind of, you know, shiny goals on the break and whatever. But But I guess, exactly like pirates, we can sometimes look like we've had a bit too much to drink and we can't defend set pieces and we're just a bit of a shambles, So exactly like pirates who play football. So if we can fix the defensive issues, I don't know how, but if we can fix it, if we can hold on to leads, when we get them, things like that, then, we probably, well, we would be in a better position. But as it is now, it just feels like it's a mixed bag.
Front four, pieces of gold, defence, men with wooden legs, maybe. Were you particularly aggrieved by that Taiwo penalty that wasn't? Anthony Taylor gets a lot of stick from a lot of people, but surely the VAR should have bailed him out here and given that one.
This is a very, very sore subject for a lot of us. For me, it wasn't a penalty. And that's not my opinion. That is just the cold fact. It wasn't a penalty. And I think we, as a club, we need to start dealing with the facts. Because the fact is, we are in a relegation scrap. So all of this stuff, we talked about the kind of, the being sucked in by a bit of the sort of hubris from the top and all that kind of stuff that we shouldn't, that we shouldn't be so unambitious or whatever. Just going back as well to the sort of relationship we have with the PGMOL, that is one that I just feel like, what is the actual point of it? I'm sure Forest are going to complain, or they already have done. I don't know. But at this point, that organization, our complaints are probably having the same sort of emotional impact as a takeout menu being popped through your letterbox. You know what I mean? Like, it's just spam. At this point, it is spam, and I don't see what we get out of it other than implying that we have some sort of faith in the system, because we're sort of going through the official channels and we're sort of, trying to do it the right way. I just don't understand like this kind of faith that we're implying that we have in the system, because it's absolute nonsense. We can't assume that they're going to get it right next time, because they're not going to get it right. It's consistent. That is the only thing you can count on. They are not going to get it right, and they will continue not to get it right. And what is the outcome of these appeals? There's no system in place that gives us back our points. There's no system that says, hey, let's hastily rearrange a game. Let's get a game going again, and we'll start from the point where the team should have had a penalty, and we'll see what happens. There's none of that. There's nothing that you get out of it other than sort of like reinforcing the kind of English stereotype of like the strongly worded letter. Like, oh, the referees have wronged us again, Kenneth. Oh, well, don't worry, Marjorie. I'm going to write them a strongly worded letter. It's just completely impotent. It's just so impotent. And but the worst thing about it is that it's sort of given us a victim mentality, which I do not think helps us in any way, and quite conveniently overlooks a lot of our own problems, like our awful defending. That is a problem. There's no point hiding behind, oh, it's the referees who've done it. Because that kind of mewling and that kind of complaining, that's going to see us blindsided by ending up playing Stoke away next season. And nobody wants that. This is the cliche was made for this. Now is the time to stand up and be counted and actually like fight them on the beaches type vibe, because we need to get this going, and there's no point hiding behind these kind of decisions. They're never going to get them right.
Yeah, I think when it comes to Pogmole, for everybody associated with Forest mental health, you want to be more Gary O'Neill and less Richard Keys, basically. Just like, hands up, these guys are idiots, but I'm not going to bang on about it every week in my blog. All right, well, look, we'll see how Forest get on in terms of decisions and anything else on the pitch when they take on West Ham this week. We'll look ahead to that shortly. Next, though, we've got a big interview. All right, a special guest with some big opinions now. Arsha's managed to secure what I believe is an exclusive interview. Let's hear it.
So I'm here with a young Forest fan, also known as my 6-year-old daughter. Firstly, before we get into this interview, and thank you for your time, can you confirm that I have paid you £5 for the privilege of this interview?
Yes.
So let's get straight into it. Who is your favourite Forest player and why?
Yatesy, because he isn't scared of anything on the football ground and he is a pretty strong fellow.
Yes, I would agree with that. He is a very brave, courageous, positive influence on the team. Let's move on to a more emotional question. How did you feel when you found out that Steve Cooper had been sacked as Nottingham Forest manager?
Sad, because I didn't want to let him go, but I felt happy because he had lasted for a very long time.
That's very true. He was and forever will be one of the greatest managers that Nottingham Forest have ever seen. So moving on, let's look to the future now. How do you feel about the current manager, a Mr. Nuno Espirito Santos?
Good, because he's saying positive things about Stevie Cooper and he is all right, actually.
Looking at the style of play that Forest currently have, we're scoring goals, but we're conceding quite a few. Do you think that Nuno's football will ultimately come good? And is it a case of him just needing more time?
It will come good in a few weeks or so, maybe. And I like the style of football that he's putting out.
All right, let's get into the final question. This is the most important question, by the way. Do you think Nottingham Forest will be relegated from the Premier League this season?
Definitely not.
You heard it here first, listeners. Definitely not. Well, I'd just like to thank you so much for your time. I know we've got plenty of playing to do. I know it is half term for you. You must be an extremely busy child. Just to confirm that £5 will be deposited into your account. Well, that about wraps it up from here. Thank you very much and have a good day.
One thing I would say, Archer, is that £5 is far too much to pay a podcast guest at current market rates. Bit of an experience shown there, perhaps. She's spot on about pretty much everything there, but especially Yatesy. How much have you coloured those opinions and how much are her own?
I haven't coloured them at all. I really didn't expect her to be taken with Ryan Yates of all players. So at the start of the season, I've probably already said this, but at the start of the season, I went to the first game of the season and I was given a mission. Dad, go to the City Ground, get me a red shirt and I want Ryan Yates on the back, 22. So I get there and obviously it's the first, you know, game of the season. Everyone's giddy. Everyone's, you know, shut up and take my money kind of vibe at the club shop. And so I was queuing up for ages. And then when I got to the thing, I paid for it, you know, and they obviously don't tell you, you know, the full story when you pay for it. So I paid for it and the personalization, took it to the other side. And then they say, oh, we've run out of small A's. So I'm there like that, stood with this red shirt and stood with my daughter's dreams in the other hand. I'm having to like, there's a queue behind me and I'm having to think on the spot, like who doesn't have an A in their name? Brennan Johnson? No, he's leaving. He's gone. It's got to be Gibbs White. I come home with a Morgan Gibbs White shirt and she has not worn it ever. It wasn't even the red shirt. It was an away shirt because they'd run out of red shirts. So total failure on my part. But I love that she loves Ryan Yates and she is so desperate for him to score a goal, as we all are.
Yeah, we'll be in the sea, the Trent or wherever when it does happen. Well, look, I'm jealous of you because my son's about the same age as your daughter and he couldn't have any less interest in football if he tried. I asked him, I've bought him every Forest shirt since he's been alive, of course. I asked him if he wanted this season's and he said, why on earth would I want another one of those? So I saved myself £50 and he didn't get one. Maybe one day in the future. Right. There are a couple of ways you can support our podcast. You can give us a nice review and a 5-star rating wherever you get your pods. You can tell a friend. And if you're able, you can help our charity partners. The first of which are Hope Nottingham. They offer a food bank service for those in need in Notts. Here's Nigel Adams from the charity to tell us more.
Hope Nottingham runs a network of 14 community hubs and food banks across the Nottingham area, everywhere from Stapleford across to Netherfield. In the last year, we've given out 25,000 food parcels for people that are struggling with all kinds of difficulty due to cost of living, due to unemployment, due to homelessness, all sorts of different issues. But we're only able to do that because we get massive, wonderful support from so many people. And Nottingham Forest, actually, in recent years, have been really helpful to us. We've done a number of food bank collections at the ground through Nottingham Forest, and the massive support that we get across the city, we're able to bring hope to hundreds of people.
To donate, visit localgiving.org/hopenottgg. We'll provide a link to that in the show notes too. Next today, we're going to preview West Ham. Right, Arsha, Forest really need a home win. So come on down, beleaguered West Ham United, the Hammers, visiting the world famous on Saturday off the back of a 6-0 humbling at the hands of Arsenal last weekend. As we record, David Moyes still in situ, but very much under pressure. Is this the perfect game then for Forest? But maybe will West Ham be thinking the same thing for them?
I think they will be thinking exactly the same thing. I watched that game on the weekend. I don't get to watch many other games that aren't Forest, but I did manage to watch that one. And it was hugely entertaining. They were so just completely inadequate as a Premier League team. I really was shocked at what I saw. Like, it was, you couldn't even describe it as sort of exhibition style kind of lack of intensity. There was just, it was a sort of 10 ghosts kind of shuffling around in claret and blue. It was so odd. But, you know, that game aside, and obviously they, I think I saw a stat that they haven't won yet in 2024, which is insane. Again, another thing to, you know, hey, Dr. Forrest can sort you out with that. But just looking at them as well as a team, individually, they're a way better team than us. Like, I know that that's not a nice thing to say, and we don't want to say things like that. But they are, like, you know, their recruitment has been quite interesting. It feels like it's been a collection of individuals rather than a kind of, oh, let's fit the blueprint and this is what we're trying to do. Definitely feels very, you know, and you only have to look at the people who run them, but it definitely feels like, hey, this is our shiny shop window and we're going to buy some stuff that you're going to want to buy kind of vibes. So like when you look at someone like Mohamed Kudus, you're just like, what are you doing at West Ham? Lucas Paqueta, what are you doing at West Ham? Like, and these two players, obviously, they won't be sticking around forever. But yeah, individually, they're a very, very good team. It's the collective that's the problem. But with David Moyes as well, I don't know. They seem to have a kind of love-hate relationship as you know, that is basically football. But it'd be one of those where, like, he feels like he's the right man for that team. I don't know what it is. Like, I'm not a West Ham fan who watches them, you know, every week or whatever. And I'm sure you know, there'd be some with really strong opinions, but I don't know. Like, it's weird. I can't sort of see anyone else in charge of West Ham. It feels like it's just, yeah, oh, West Ham, the David Moyes team.
But, you know, they won a trophy last season, in fairness to them, and they got James Ward-Prowse, who I absolutely love. I wish he played for Forest. What about us, though? We spoke earlier about our weaknesses. I think, I'm just looking at the team that started against Newcastle, I think that front four of Elanga, Gibbs White, Hudson Odoi, and Awoniyi, I think most teams in the Premier League would take at least two of those players, if not in their starting 11, in their squad. That's our strength that we've got to play to, right? We've got the pace of the two guys out wide, the quality of Gibbs White, and Awoniyi, who's still working his way back to fitness, but is a proper goal scorer. We need to be looking at the positives and focusing on where we can hurt them. And it's those four guys, right?
Yeah, it is. But also, these two teams play very similar football. They almost set up in exactly the same way. It's very much, you know, predicated on wide play, getting crosses in and, you know, being sort of quite balanced in a way. But yeah, I mean, that front four should get you really excited. And I guess one of the positives, or two of the positives that came out of that Newcastle game, was Elanga. You know, apart from that fatal bad, you know, pass that he made for their goal, he played, you know, he was good. He's been, like, if you're looking at it now, he's definitely, I don't know if it's too early to start talking about player of the season, but he's definitely in that conversation Just on a numbers standpoint as well, like he really is. And another one was Callum Hudson-Odoi, because it was great. It was perfectly timed. It was so lovely because Sky were just slating him. The commentators were absolutely slating him. It was horrible to hear, oh, failed talent, oh, failed Chelsea prospect. And then he goes and scores a goal and just shuts them up. I love that. Like, he is definitely someone, if you can get his confidence up and get him sort of in that exact position he seems to score those goals from, I think it's just the exact position. If you can get him there, he will score that sort of curled finish. So it's nice to see him coming back. Taiwo is a funny one. I feel like because of the situation, I don't know what you think, but like I feel like he's being rushed back in. He definitely doesn't look 100%. He's getting closer, I think. He's sort of getting there, you know. But what we all love about him is that he, you know, he is unashamedly a striker. I was thinking about it as well, because that was over the last few years, I think my pet peeve for Forest strikers is that they've never been those kind of out and out strikers. Like even Lewis Grabban, like if you look at Lewis Grabban, yes, he scored all those goals, but he was still one of those players who would always come deep and always go wide and always kind of like try and get involved in play that way. And you were just begging him to sort of stay centrally, because if he did, he'd score more goals than he actually did, because he was lethal. So it's nice to have someone who is just unashamedly the guy who runs down the centre. So if we can get him firing again, I think obviously he is literally central to our plans. So in prospect, and then obviously Morgan as well, you know, who is sort of a bit up and down at the moment. But if we can get those guys firing, I think we stand a really, really good chance in this game as well, because West Ham, like I was having a look at some of their stats as well. They are very, very susceptible to balls in behind. Like a lot of kind of, you know, if you can sort of get Taiwo sort of running on the last man, you know, a Morgan Gibbs-White kind of through ball, I think, you know, they'll be done more often than not. But again, that comes down to if we do get the lead on Saturday, will we be able to hold it? Because that is the big problem.
Yeah, got to be one of the biggest dilemmas Nuno's facing about Taiwo, because we absolutely cannot afford to lose him with Chris Wood out for any period at all. So he's got to be really carefully managed. Let's hope that that's the case, because we don't want to be relying on old Divock Origi, that's for sure. So presumably, from what we've said earlier, at the back, we're bringing Bolly straight back in, are we? Is that alongside Murillo rather than Niakate or Amabamadeli?
I would personally go Murillo. Definitely go for Murillo. I think Amabamadeli, yes, definitely something there, you know, but just inexperienced. And if you've got those options, you know, I say that, and Murillo's literally played about 10 games in his entire career. I don't know. There's just something about Murillo that just feels like solid. I don't know if it's because of the way he's built. He just looks like this kind of, he just fills you with confidence. He definitely feels like he's sort of next on the kind of conveyor belt in terms of, you know, look at how shiny he wears. Do you want to buy any of them big clubs, so-called big clubs? For me, though, there's one really, really tricky one at left back. I don't know, like, how anybody else feels, but I'm pretty sure they probably feel the same way. I don't understand Nuno Tavares.
I don't either, but I wonder how much of it is because he snogs dogs and how much of it is because that awful game he had for Arsenal against us, that's totally, like, predisposed me to not rate him. But he gets in good positions, and then his decision making, like with his dogs, is terrible. So is that the problem?
Exactly that. Those are, you know, two very compelling pieces of kind of evidence as to why you should not like this guy. It's funny you say that about the position, because it does feel like that. I watched him in the game on the weekend, and he reminded me, and this came from absolutely nowhere, he reminded me of Ollie Burke. There was just something Ollie Burke about him. And then I thought, oh, yeah, do you remember that quote from whatever German sporting director it was?
Yeah, the Leipzig guy, player. Yeah,
nothing in the hard drive or whatever it was. Like,
need to completely reprogram him.
Yeah, you need to reprogram him. I feel like you definitely need to do this to Nuno Tavares, because there is a good player in there. He's very athletic, you know, in that kind of cliched way. He gets into good positions, but he just seems to be fatally flawed in his kind of decision-making. I just don't understand why he's sort of he seems nailed on as well, which is very strange. Harry Toffolo has done nothing really wrong this whole season. And in a kind of season where it feels like, you know, we're getting by at left back, we don't really have a strong favourite. Oh, you know, when he's fit, he's definitely playing. In this kind of a kind of season where we don't have that headliner, you kind of feel like, oh, you know, that'd be a good sort of chance for Toffolo to come in and really show what he can do in the Premier League, which I feel like at times this season he really has. So I don't understand it. I don't know if it's just like I can communicate my ideas to Nuno Tavares because we both speak the same language. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but that is one position that I don't quite understand. And is it such a kind of big factor in as to sort of why we're not looking solid at the back? I don't know. I don't know. But he is a funny one. There is definitely a good player in there, but I don't know under how many layers.
Yeah, it's nice to have the nostalgic feeling of worrying about the left-back options, though, isn't it? Makes you think of the post-Stuart Pearce era, to an extent, I guess. Head-to-head-wise, Forest lost the reverse 3-2. Suchet got a late winner at the London Stadium in November. Another 3-2 defeat. Crikey. This was the first home game of last season. You'll remember it well. Dean Henderson saved the penalty. Forest won 1-0. It was a brilliant atmosphere. We absolutely need to recreate every aspect of that because we've won 3 of 15 home games in 90 minutes this season. And that, frankly, is going to send us down. So let's hope that we can do it. Anyway, need a big win. Got some difficult games coming up. I was just looking at this, actually, Arsh, and I'm thinking West Ham, we've been speaking for a few weeks about how these home games are important. We're going to need to win one of them. After this, we go away to Villa and then host Liverpool in the Premier League and then go to Brighton. But actually, I'm thinking March to early April is what's going to decide our season because we've got Luton away and then back-to-back home games against Palace and Fulham. So if we're still in touch around about that time and we're not deducted 10 points, then I'll feel more confident that we're going to stay up.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. It feels like sort of the same as last season. Feels like, you know, we had a kind of difficult run in then as well. And we, you know, we got quite a few sort of surprise results like the Brighton one and stuff. But again, it's that looming, you know, spectre of the points deduction, not knowing what, when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen. You know, I read something this week saying that it would possibly be, we'd find out in April, which just seems insane. I don't believe that that would be the case. It is like, it's just such a kind of, when you break it down and you're not sort of living week to week and just enjoying, trying to enjoy your football, there is a lot going on, isn't there? There really is a lot that can sort of decide how happy we'll be as Forest fans next year. It's horrible that it's all off the pitch stuff, but yeah, let's see.
Just got to rack up as many points as possible. Those remaining home games in the league starts with West Ham this weekend, then Liverpool, Palace, Fulham, Wolves, Man City and Chelsea. I'll see if I can call in a favour for that last one. We'll wait and see. Right, we're nearly done today. And finally, though, with the club this week declaring that laying on an autograph session for kids to meet players at the Megastore further amplifies the club's plans to transform the fan experience for our loyal supporters, I want suggestions on what we could come up with to further transform the fan experience. Can be serious, can be silly. What you got for me, Arsha?
I mean, first off, can you just improve the food? Never mind like the bells and whistles, like can you just sort out the food, because all the good food is outside the ground and when you're in the ground you're like, oh, I should have eaten, oh, I wasn't hungry then but I'm hungry now, and oh, I can't go back out and oh, they've packed up. So I watch a lot of baseball. I get to sort of go out to watch the Blue Jays play baseball, and that experience of watching baseball is so wholly different. Of course it is. But there's just something about it that sort of we could learn a lot from. I know cricket has tried to learn from sports like that and just like failed spectacularly. Like, you know, how can you watch baseball and then, you know, think that, oh, we need girls allowed to do a You know what I mean? It's just like someone's seen it and gone, oh yeah, we can do that. Yeah, we're just, you know, we just do our sort of British rubbish version of it. I think it's the stuff around it, you know, that you can sort of build up. I don't know how, you know, whether it's like silly games. I don't know. I quite liked the old, you know, this sort of silly kind of penalty taking and all that kind of stuff, you know, from sort of the mid 2000s or whatever, whenever it was, just the kind of like silly games and stuff. But even when it comes to like things like the music as well, I think we're all a bit sick of the music. Like, you've got such an opportunity as well. And because we feel like such a kind of community club in a way, we're obviously like a big city, but it does feel like a kind of a club that belongs to us. Why not do something like, I don't know, instead of playing that nonsense that you play at halftime that no one is listening to, why don't you just give a showcase to some Nottingham bands? Like, get some music on, get some people. It's not the best PA system in the world or whatever, but just use it for someone to go, oh, you know, I'm actually interested in listening to this band, you know, instead of like completely forgettable techno music. Just little things like that. I mean, I don't know. What have you got?
I've got music as one of my things. I don't want Welcome to the Jungle as the walkout music. It's old, and forests and jungles are different things, so it doesn't even work. I don't want that horrible techno dirge that comes out before the second half. As you say, the PA system is not good enough to make that sound good. So yeah, definitely changing the music. A serious one, sort out the concourses and the Brian Clough stand, because it is actually scary in there when it gets packed and when you have to use the loo or whatever at halftime. It feels like something bad could happen there. And I think that that's something that genuinely the club need to address. In less serious stuff, I've also got, make the halftime chat with an ex-player spicier. So Neil Webb, last time I was at the City Grounds, what was that, Arsenal, he came on at halftime and he had to kind of try and make a case for the fact that we weren't playing not very well and we're about to get beaten. I want to know, like, who was the biggest dickhead you ever played with? Just name and shame people at halftime. Who's the worst manager that you ever had? How do you really feel about Robin Hood? Or for Neil Webb in particular, you know, like, what's it like being a postman? That kind of thing. Just the actual interesting insight that we could get from these ex-pros. And if all else fails, just let a dog loose on the pitch. I remember, I think it was against Man City in the 90s, but it wasn't the Gary Crosby game. A dog got onto the pitch during the game, and you've never seen people so happy in your life at anything ever, just at a dog running around a football pitch. Cheap to do, you know, I'll lend you mine, Brian, if you like. But yeah, a few ideas there. Cat on the pitch, or dog, or, I don't know, an elephant?
I don't know, I always feel, I love cats, so I don't like seeing them anywhere near football pitches. Wasn't the Anfield cat? Was that a cat?
Yes.
Yeah the Anfield cat. And but he feels like, you know, he's got an agent and stuff. So he definitely feels like completely legit. So he's allowed to be near a football stadium. But the rest, I don't know. I always feel like, oh, it's a cat. Yeah, but I completely agree, man. We need some cheap gags. We need some stuff. We need, you know, just a full-on gossip session, I think. Why not? You know, like, as long as they don't say anything that gets them cancelled. You know, we can't exactly say, you know, whatever happens in the City Ground stays in the City Ground. You know, we're not a championship team yet.
Let us know your suggestions for how we can improve the match day experience. As I say, follow us on X at the Garibaldi G. We're on Instagram as well. You can also watch this podcast on YouTube. Just search for the Garibaldi Gazette and it will come up. You will see Arsha's delightfully tasteful house and background. And also this week, my 1999 third kit, the blue one with the Pinnacle sponsor, which is one of my faves. All right, that's going to do it for this week. Thank you as ever, Arsha, for your wonderful insight. Shame on your part that you've been trumped by your daughter, but that's just the way it goes, I'm afraid. Thanks to David as well for his contributions and to Lucy for putting it all together. We'll catch up with you again next week. Bye for now.